So it doesn't need, you don't need new information. You don't need new meditation. You're not competing against a philosophy, against a perception, and so forth. You're competing against nothingness. And the only way it could become something is if you make it something. So if you don't define it as something, you define it as nothing. It remains what it really was all the way from the beginning. Nothing. Pardon? Obviously. If someone doesn't recognize that there is a problem, it means that the haughtiness and the ego has inflated itself so much to take over even his mind. His entire psyche was pervaded by it. And that's a very, very unhealthy and tragic situation, which that Alter Rebbe doesn't address in Perek Chavtes, because that is a situation of a man whose brain was fried, unfortunately. And that he addressed in chapter 17. Sometimes hitting rock bottom is the only solution. But that's a separate discussion. Let's discuss from chapter 17. The metaphor given previously from light and darkness is a metaphor just in the sense that the definition of darkness is, it doesn't have a definition of its own. The definition is when there is no light, there is darkness. So the moment there is light, there is no darkness. The same is true with Sitra Achra. Sitra Achra is like darkness in the sense it has no substance, it has no reality. When there is no Kedusha, when there is no Kedusha, Sitra Achra can talk about itself, can present its case in a very lively and valid and even urgent way. The moment Kedusha enters into the room, so to speak, Sitra Achra is faced with the presence of Kedusha, automatically, similar to darkness, it loses its whole intensity, its whole power. Because it never had any power or any authority. I, Fregdal Terebbe, we see that our own animal soul makes all these mishagasin in our life, notwithstanding that it's living in the presence of holiness, of a divine soul. He says, here, Hashem gave it special permission to present itself as a reality, in order that you should identify it for what it really is. And this allows the divine soul to perceive the unity of Hashem as if through as you perceive something through physical sight. And it's something which can achieve only in this world, not in the higher worlds. Because when the divine soul observes the fact that what seemed yesterday so urgent, so valid, so awesome, so powerful, is today totally meaningless and doesn't trigger any chord in my psyche, it demonstrates to the soul the unity of Hashem in such a more real way. Because in the upper world or without this challenge, it experiences the unity as unity. Here it experienced apparently a whole other reality which seemed so real and so true. And then the divine soul observes that when you just call it on its nothingness, and you don't allow it to dictate your behavior, and you don't allow it to define you, and you tell it what it is, and you say, you get out of my system, because you're evil, and you're vile, and you're abominable, it's out of your system. Because there was nothing in your system, just the fact that you felt it, made itself feel that it was in your system, and as long as you give it credence, so then you're creating it in your system. So that gives the divine soul a whole new appreciation of what Yichud Hashem means, of what the unity of Hashem is. It shows its real unity in a much deeper way. Because such a reality that suggested itself as so powerful is really powerless, nothing.
Yeah.
You're asking with both inclinations, Yetzirah and Yetzirah Hara. That's exactly the point. What he's saying is, means that the tzaddik is that individual who has the ability to transform the animal soul into an ally and a partner with the divine soul. By the Alter Rebbe, godliness was a reality. The soul was a reality. Quite amazing. We find actually such a type of event explicitly stated in the Torah in connection with the spice. What occurred in the event of the spice in Parshas Shlach? Moshe Rabbeinu sends 12 scouts to go visit the Holy Land and to inform the Jewish people of what is the situation there as a preparation for the Yidden going into the land and conquering it and settling it. Everybody knows that 10 of the 12 spies that were sent came back and presented to the Jewish people a very ill-favored report about the land and dissuaded the entire nation of entering into the land. Zogd Alter Rebbe Shemetchilam, who initially the spies stated, they declared, Ki chazak hu mimenu. In Parshas Shlach, they said, Ki chazak hu mimenu, when they came back, for he, the enemy, is stronger than we. And our sages interpret this verse in Masechtas Daf Lamed Hey and in Erek and Daf Tesvav and in other places. Al tikri mimenu ela mimenu. Read not mimenu, which means stronger than we, but chazaku mimenu than he. Meaning they are stronger than he, the Almighty One. Shaloi haminu biyecheilas Hashem. They had no faith in Hashem's ability to lead them into the Holy Land. That is what the spies declared initially, and they dissuaded the entire nation from going in into the Holy Land. It was a night of Tisha B'Av, and the Pasuk describes how the entire nation wept all night, demanding from Moshe to take them back to Mitzrayim, to Egypt. What followed after that was that Hashem revealed himself to Moshe and expressed his desire to annihilate the Jewish people. Ad masa yinatsu niyam azeh, till when? How long will this nation provoke me? Moshe prays, Hashem forgives them, salachti kidvarecha, but he vows that this generation will not go into the land, they will pass away in the desert. Then the Torah tells us how the Meraglim died, and then the Torah tells us that Moshe spoke all of these words to the Jewish people, and they mourned exceedingly. And they awoke in the morning, and they told Moshe, they went up to the mountaintop, and they said, Hinenu v'alinu, we are here, we're going up to Eretz Yisrael. We acknowledge that we sinned. Moshe warned them not to do it, because Hashem is not among you, and Hashem bekirbechem, but many of them did not obey. They went up anyway, and they were defeated by the Amalekites and by the Canaanites, as discussed in Parshas Shlach. So the Alter Rebbe asks here a very powerful question. Whence did their faith in Hashem's ability return to them? In the beginning, they cried, let us go back to Mitzrayim. They accepted the statement of the Meraglim that the kings in Israel are stronger than, in Canaan and Israel, which would become Israel, are stronger than Hashem. And then suddenly, they wake up in the morning, they say, we're going up. From where? Whence did their faith return? Moshe Rabbeinu had not shown them in the interim any sign or miracle concerning this. Raksha Amar Lehem, he had merely told them, Eich shekatzaf Hashem aleim, that Hashem was angry with them, v'nishba shalei lovi em alaretz, and Hashem had sworn not to allow them to enter the land. Uma hayol zelahem. What value did this have for them? Im loy hayol ma'aminim b'yicholus Hashem chas v'sholom lichbash lamed aleph malachim. Malachim. Lichbash lamed aleph malachim. If they did not believe in Hashem's ability to subdue the 31 kings who reigned in the land at the time. Umipnei zeh leirotzu klal leikanes laretz. For which reason they had no desire whatsoever to enter into the land. So what changed? What caused this drastic metamorphosis in the Jewish people's hearts? Moshe did not explain to them or provide them with new information how they will be able to go into the land. Moshe did not provide them with a miracle that they will be able to defeat the 31 kings. For example, like in the case of Korach. Korach's mutiny against Moshe, where the earth opened up and swallowed Korach and his men. Or in the case of Eliyahu in the Carmel Mountains, when he fought the 400 Baal prophets, where a fire came down from heaven and consumed his offerings versus the false prophets' offerings. On the contrary, what the Jews saw was that Hashem agreed with them. He told Moshe, they won't go into Israel, they'll die in the desert. So what happened? They could not believe that Hashem could take them into Israel. So when Moshe communicates to them what Hashem said, suddenly their hearts are changed. Apparently they should say, let's go back to Mitzrayim. Suddenly they became believers. Hinenu v'alinu. What occurred that they changed their minds and feelings from one extreme to the other extreme? No, what would you say? They fear that Hashem cannot take them into Eretz Yisrael. Hashem told Moshe they will not go into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe communicated to them. He said, you will all die in the desert. In the morning they awoke, we're going up to Eretz Yisrael. Why?
That was the proof, the shaker, that they thought that they were not able to be Menatzeach going in there. That Hashem...
What happened? Did he demonstrate to them that they will be able to go in? You mean the death of the Meraglim?
No, when they thought that they were going to die, their ego was deflated, and then
one second. The Shiloh death of the Meraglim, that you can ask. Someone Taka once asked the Rebbe, in the Psukim, in the middle, it says that the Meraglim died. It says, before Moshe communicating to the Jews what Hashem told them, the people who spread the report against the land died in a plague before Hashem. There are different opinions how they died. One of the opinions, for example, is that they died through breathing in the ear. The ear that they breathed in was unhealthy and it killed them. The Siparno writes that. It was mida keneged mida, measure for measure, that they said that the ear of Eretz Yisrael consumes its inhabitants. So the ear of the desert consumed them. So there are various interpretations. But apparently you could say that when the Jews saw that the Meraglim passed away, the Meraglim died, they realized that what they said was untrue, and then they decided they want to go to Eretz Yisrael. But really, the Rebbe responded in a letter. He said, "You cannot answer the Alter Rebbe's question with this idea, because everybody knows that when did the Meraglim die? When did the event of the spies occur? When did the event of the which day? Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av." They cried that night, and Hashem said it's going to be a b'chila des. Targum Yonis ben Uzziel writes, when did the Meraglim die? Zion Elul. The Meraglim died the seventh day of Elul. In fact, it's Halach in Shulchan Aruch. In Erechayim, Simen Tov Kuf Pei, in Tur and in Shulchan Aruch, is discussed the days that we fast. These fasts are not practiced by most Jews, but there are certain days in the year that certain tragedies occurred during those days, and we fast during those days. And one of the days, Zakhti Shulchan Aruch in the Tur, Yud Zion Elul, you fast. Why do you fast? Because the Meraglim died. There's a girsa, Zion El. In some places it says Zion El. Some places it says Yud Zion El. But in any case, they passed away in El. The story with the crying happened on Tisha B'Av. That's when Hashem decreed that the Jewish people should stay there in the desert. Moshe, we prayed for them immediately, apparently, and he communicated to the Jewish people. So you can't say that it's the death of the spies that transformed them from one extreme to the other extreme. So why is it stuffed in there? That's a good kasha, to the extent that the Rosh, in Shalos Teshuvos HaRosh, wants to say that when it says in Megillas Tainus that on Zion Elul the Mitzvah Dibas Haaretz died, it doesn't mean the Meraglim. He says there were some other people, maybe, who spread some report against the land at some time in Jewish history. Because he says it doesn't make sense that they died at Zion El, it's stuffed in there. It's a Havamin, and most people don't accept that. But it's in, the question is a powerful question. So the literal reason the Rebbe presents why it's stuffed in here is a Maimer HaMuzger, which means a parenthetical note. The Torah wants to first finish telling the story what happened with the spies. And when the Torah finishes that, the Torah goes back to tell us about the communication of this whole event to the Jewish people. So first the Torah says what actually happened. What happened between Hashem and Moshe. First what happened between with the spies, they coming back, them dissuading the Jews, Hashem talking to Moshe, what happened to the Meraglim, and then how Moshe communicates this to the Jewish people. The Beis Yosef in Tur asks the question you're asking. So why is the Pasuk here? So the Beis Yosef says that they became ill on Tisha B'Av. They passed away in Elul. But they fell ill on Tisha B'Av. But the Rebbe writes, even according to the Beis Yosef, first of all, we anyway have to assume that the Pasuk is a parenthetical. Because the Pasuk doesn't say they became ill, the Pasuk says they died. And that certainly didn't happen at this stage. This happened much later. But even more than this, even if you're going to want to say that they fell ill then, this would not constitute a sufficient miracle for the Jewish people to enter into the land. Because Yidden saw many miracles. That wasn't the issue. They fear that all the miracles don't demonstrate to them that they can defeat 31 kings. That was the problem. So this miracle of Meraglim falling ill would not suffice to demonstrate that they can enter into Yisrael. They saw many other miracles that Hashem performed. That wasn't the issue. This was a generation that saw miracle after miracle. That's why the Rebbe says, the Alter Rebbe writes, he didn't show them any sign for this. It could be there were other miraculous events that happened, but not for this. And that's what Alter Rebbe says, Davar zeh mefurish b'Torah. This is explicit in the Torah, because after everything said and done, the pasuk says, "Vayidaber Moshe hadvarim eil al kol bnei Yisrael vayisablu am oid." Moshe spoke these words to the Jews, and the Jews mourned, which means and it indicates clearly that they mourned because Moshe said this. So the question is, what happened? So the answer is alavadai. For sure, the answer is as follows: Mipnei she Yisrael atzma bnei maminim. Because Yidden themselves are believers, the children of believers. It's a quote from Gemara in Shabbos, Sadik Zayin Amud Aleph. Hashem told Moshe, Yidden amaminim bnei maminim. Jews are believers, children of believers. Rak, it's just Shasit Ra'achira. Hamalubashes begufam. The Sit Ra'achira, the unhealthy, egotistical, concealing realms. Which was closed in their body, like in every Jewish body. He could be a atzmal erkdushas nafsham halakis, has risen and inflated itself against the energy of the holiness of the divine soul. Begasus rucha v'gavhusa, with its arrogance and haughtiness. Bechutzpah b'litam v'das, with a chutzpah without sense or reason. That is what occurred. V'lachain, therefore, miyad shekot saf Hashem aleim. As soon as Hashem became angry with them, v'hirim b'kol raj v'regez, and thundered angrily with the following words, saying, Admas ayle eidara azayz, how long shall I bear with this negative community? B'midbar v'goymer, etc. B'midbar azay yiplu p'greichim v'goymer, your bodies shall fall in this wilderness, v'goymer, etc. Ani Hashem dibarti im lo yzois esel l'chal eidara azayz v'goymer. I, Hashem, have spoken, I will surely do it unto all this negative community. U'kesheshom u'dvarim kashem elu. And when the Jewish people heard these stern words, nichna v'nishbar libam b'kirbam, their heart was humbled and broken within them. Kidiksiv, as the Pasuk says, v'yisablu wa'am, Ha-Ma'ed, and the people mourned exceedingly. U'me'mele, and therefore consequently, Nafla ha-Sitra Achara mimem shalta v'gavusa v'gasus rucha. The Sitra Achara fell from its dominion, from its haughtiness and arrogance. V'Yisrael atzmanei ma'aminim, and the Yidden themselves are believers. So what is the Alter Rebbe saying? Yeah, has good gesagt. Yidden themselves are believers. Yidden themselves believed when Hashem told them initially they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. When the spies came down and dissuaded them from going in, a Yid is a believer. The soul of a Jew believes. It's godly. It's connected to Hashem. It observes Hashem. It's spiritual. That is what its essence is. It naturally believes. The belief doesn't have to be created, molded, introduced, fashioned, designed. A Jew believes. The only problem was that a Jew consists of two souls, a tale of two souls, and the other soul suggests another reality, where notwithstanding the fact that Hashem says we're going into Eretz Yisrael, there are 31 kings and so many natural forces against us. So the moment the Sitra Achira was put in its place, how was it put in its place? Not by miracles, not by new information, but by the thunder it experienced. It was identified. Moshe communicated to them the stern words. So the Sitra Achira was terrified. The Sitra Achira was overwhelmed by that divine rage, so to speak. So the Sitra Achira fell. The bubble was busted. The shell was breached. The wall was removed. The faith of the soul emerged naturally. The whole obstacle was not that they didn't have faith. The whole obstacle was the gossip of the Sitra Achira, the haughtiness of Sitra Achira. Sitra Achira shouted that they don't believe. They believed. When that shout and scream of Sitra Achira is nullified, automatically there's a munah. And the same is true concerning here with Timtum Halef. When the Jew apparently is unmoved, or is really unmoved by spirituality, it's not that the human being is not spiritual. There is a certain haughty shell that's creating a blockage. When it's thundered against, it's reduced. When it's reduced to nothingness, the natural sensation of the divine soul comes out in its full intensity, and the Jew becomes alive again. It comes back. No, that's already, the Sitra Achira came back. One second. That's the next day. Peder Koftes is not a one-time event. It's a daily event. One second. No, let's see what happened. Hinenu Valinu wasn't bad. One second. No, one second. Let me read the Pesukim here. When Moshe told these words, Al Kol Bnei Yisrael, they mourned exceedingly. Vayashkimu Babaker, they awoke in the morning. Who? Apparently, it seems, the nation, the same people to whom he communicated the words. And they went up to the mountaintop. And they said, we're ready to go up. Moshe now warned them not to do it because Hashem is not among you. Now it says they continue to go up. It's very, very possible, and the Pasuk, as usual, doesn't get into all the details of the event that are not directly consequential and crucial to the story. That the very desire to go up wasn't wrong. On the contrary, that's what Hashem wanted. Moshe told them not to go up. So apparently, it would seem, many of them listened to Moshe and they went down. Then there was a new component, a new element was introduced. They're going to be Kligavi Moshe Rabbeinu. They're going to have Mesiris Nefesh more than Moshe Rabbeinu demands. Yeah, but till the Tzivi of Moshe, Hinenu V'alinu was the response of a faithful Jew. And this is the doctrine the Alter Rebbe presents here. That since you're dealing with something that has substance and something that is substanceless, something that has no substance, when it is identified for what it truly is, it loses its hold on our life, and the soul is liberated to bring us back to who we truly are.
But in so doing, by even saying nothing, you represent us.
Based on this, every person in whose mind there occur doubts concerning faith in Hashem can deduce from this that these doubts are nothing but the words of the Sitra Achira alone, Hamagbiya Atzmal Nafshay, which raises itself against his soul. Avo Yisrael Atzman Heimaminim Chuli, but Yidden themselves are believers, and so forth. So the Alter Rebbe here is saying that this should be put in perspective. True, a Jew may experience from time to time, frequently or infrequently, doubts concerning Hashem's existence, Hashem's unity, and so on and so forth. But he must put it in perspective. What is this? The Jew must know that these are nothing but the words of the Sitra Achira, which is attempting to conceal his soul. But the Jew himself is a believer. So a Jew should know that a Yid be'etzem innately, essentially believes. For a Jew, it's abnormal not to believe. It's not natural for him not to believe. It's part of the chemistry of his personality. The innate natural condition of a Jew is that he believes. He is aware, he perceives the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and thus he believes. So emunah doesn't have to be created, doesn't have to be acquired, doesn't have to be introduced into a Jew's life. It's there essentially by virtue of the fact that a Jew has a soul that believes. Yisrael, atzmam heimaminim. It's just that sometimes his innate essential condition and state can be blocked, it can be plugged, it can be stopped, and that has to be removed. That's why we see, how does the expression go, that there are no atheists in foxholes. Because atheism stems not from the soul, it stems from the ego, from the egotistical consciousness that obscures the soul. So whenever there's a situation that the ego is shaken up, when the sense of self-sufficiency is challenged in a severe way, when the sense of separateness is shocked by a certain event, it removes the egotistical husk and the soul emerges. And the axiom is that when the soul emerges, its inherent faith that was there all of the time appears and shines forth in its full splendor. That's why we see this also in most cases. Whenever there is a significant amount of pressure in life, the emunah is more revealed. This is the clown. Wherever and whenever you encounter a situation where people's egos are not so powerful and they are more in touch with their inner selves, there you will find powerful emunah. Whenever there's a situation that challenges the external, dynamics of the person, that shocks his regular day-to-day comfort zone, and thus he's forced, so to speak, to get in touch with a deeper dimension, with a deeper dynamic of self, the emunah comes shining forth in its full majesty. That's the reason, for example, if you're familiar in environments. Let me give an example of our common environment today. Environments like those of 12-step programs. Or were groups that are truly dedicated to honest internal spiritual growth. If you observe human beings in those environments, if you observe the ambiance, the atmosphere of such situations, you discover very profound emunah, very real, genuine trust in Hashem. Because in those places and locations, people are more in touch with themselves. Because the various mechanisms that we contrive during our life to protect ourselves have failed these people. They have been devastated, whether by other people's behavior or by their own behavior. They have wrecked their lives, whether it's through alcohol or any other type of addiction or sickness or disease, abuse, and so on and so forth. So their ego has failed them. The security that this world and its external successes offers is not working. They are forced to discover a deeper element, the true element of what a human being is, my inside, what is really there? That's my soul. And the soul believes. The soul believes just like the eyes see, just like the ears hear, just as the mouth tastes, the soul perceives of something else. The soul perceives ultimate reality, which is Hashem. It's like a sixth sense. Obviously, if the eyes are blocked, you can't perceive, even if the painting is beautiful and exquisite, and so on and so forth. So a person, a human being, a Jew sometimes, is overtaken by a crisis in faith. This is true especially by young people, young Jews. How do we deal with it? But it's not only by youth. It sometimes happens during midlife, when there are various problems and crises come up and so forth. How does one deal with this issue? Truth be told, even though it's not discussed often, this is a common problem, especially in religious Jewish communities. In yeshivas and Torah institutions, often, or not so often, young people, young boys, young teenagers, and so forth, feel and they're overtaken by sveikes in emunah. It can be at a younger age, when they mature a little bit, when they begin thinking, and so forth. So usually people tend to respond to this in one of two ways, generally speaking. One response is, no, how'd they deal with this in your yeshiva? You don't know, because no one ever spoke about it. That's the first response. Repression and denial. A bacher is 18, 19, 20, a young man, a young woman. This is an example. It can happen at any age, at any given time, at any circumstance. Is overtaken by serious doubts. Everything that he was taught for decades upon decades suddenly is put into question. A big question mark is placed following all of the information that he was, so to speak, indoctrinated with for years after years after years. Sometimes it's so frightening, the young boy or young girl feels, I must bury it. I have to repress it. So he feels as if he has a dark skeleton in the closet of his psyche, one which he must never allow under any circumstances to emerge, because it's the worst devastating, most terrible, horrific thought. That's one response. On the other extreme, there's another response. The person wants to be honest with himself. He wants to be honest to himself and to others. So he allows this feeling or this question or these doubts or these dilemmas to define him. He allows them to consume his personality. And he wants to be honest, so he abandons his previous lifestyle and embarks on a path and a behavior that's devoid of emunah. The Alter Rebbe presents here, albeit briefly, the Hasidic approach, which is diametrically opposed to the two above-mentioned approaches. And this approach is actually twofold. A, you may acknowledge the phenomenon. It's all right. It exists. It's an issue. You're allowed to talk about it. Me, the Alter Rebbe, they're talking about it. You should acknowledge it. You should talk about it. Don't worry. Don't go crazy. Don't decide that you are a diseased, ill, unhealthy, horrific human being, and for all of eternity, till the end of your life, you will have to bury this component of your psyche very deeply and not allow anyone to perceive it. That's a very unhealthy way of living. Don't worry, you can acknowledge it. On the other hand, you must not allow it to define you and to paralyze your spirituality. Acknowledge it, but identify its source. Namely, what is its source? It's coming in the element of the of. It's coming from the element in the human consciousness which strives to constantly block our soul, to alienate ourselves from our true selves. It's ultimately an alien superimposed voice, albeit that it's part of your system. It's not the real you. It's coming from the egotistical, opaque animal soul. So don't treat it respectfully. Don't embrace it and allow it to define you. Identify it. Identify its source. Call it on its emptiness. Nurture your own soul, and it will slowly dissipate. And then the splendorous, inherent emunah of a yid shines forth, as mentioned, in its full majesty and royalty. That's the reason, by the way, we observe as well that often doubts concerning emunah issues come about quite frequently when people are in situations when they are alienated from themselves. For example, doubts of emunah come frequently as a result of abuse, as a result of anger, frustration, tragedy, deep pressures, temptations, cravings, impulses, and so forth. That is often the cause that we feel a lack of emunah. In all these situations, we are reacting to life based on external forces. We cannot feel ourselves. When I'm very angry with someone, when I'm experiencing deep frustration, I'm not myself. You know, they say it's unwise to make a decision when you're burning from anger. Why not? Because the decisions you make then are totally, usually, untrue to what your real convictions are, to what your feelings. You can decide that you hate what you really love. You can decide that you love what you really despise, and so forth. So when one realizes this, you must respond accordingly. You can't treat it as the true self. You have to first feel yourself in a real way. And then the Alter Rebbe says, if a yid gets in touch with himself, if he feels himself, I promise you, you're a maimon. Don't blame it on a munah. There can be blockages. There can be various concealments. There can be curtains, walls, shells, husks, and so forth. If we don't allow it to take us over, if we identify what it truly is and you get in touch with your soul, the natural emunah emerges. A yid once came into the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, and he complained to the Rebbe that he lately is experiencing very profound doubts concerning his faith in Hashem. So the Rebbe turns to the Jew and says, why is that bothering you? No! What's the big deal? The Jew was shocked. He says, Rebbe, what do you mean? I'm a Yid, I'm a Jew. The Rebbe said, ah, in that case, everything is fine. And Alter Rebbe continues and adds an additional point. V'gam ha-sitra achira atzma. Even the Sitra Achira itself, Ein la sveikus klal b'emunah. She herself doesn't entertain any doubts at all concerning faith. Even that unhealthy, That unroyal, ungodly part in us, the find of this, it's not gonna, she herself also believes. She doesn't have any doubts concerning Emunah. Rak shenitin la rishus leval bil ha'adam b'divrei sheker u'mirma. That was just granted to her permission to confuse man with false and deceitful words. And the purpose of this permission that was granted to her is lahar b'ischare, in order that he may be rewarded in a more, in a deeper way. Similar to the metaphor of the immoral woman, the harlot, who attempts to seduce the king's son, the prince, b'sheker u'mirma, through falsehood and deceit. B'rishus hamelech, and this is performed with the permission and the approval of the king. K'mesha kasu b'zayir HaKadosh, as in the parable narrated in the Holy Zayir in Parshas Truma. This metaphor discussed in Zayar, which was quoted also above at the conclusion of chapter 9, is an interesting metaphor where there was once a king who wanted to examine and test the integrity of the prince, because he wanted to know if indeed his son is worthy and is capable of succeeding him when the time comes. What did the king do? He did something very painful. But he felt he must do it, because that would be the only way he can truly, truly establish the inner integrity and true value system of the prince. So he hired a woman to seduce his son into behaving immorally. And she fulfills her mission faithfully. She comes to the door of the prince's home or whatever chamber, and she does her job. The king obviously does not want this child, the prince, to fall prey to her temptation. But it's not just the king. She herself does not desire that the prince should submit to her temptation, because she is a faithful servant of the king. And she knows very clearly how distressed, how depressed, how sad the king would be if the prince succumbs. So she tempts the prince, and she has to do a good job, because it has to be a valid test. But inside she prays that he should not obey her, that he should not listen to her, that he should reject her. She wants that he should take her and throw her out of his home. But the prince can obviously never know this. He must think that she's earnest, that she's genuine, that she's for real. If she tells him the truth, it would be all over. It wouldn't be a test anymore. It would be a game. It's only through this concealment, where she appears to be on his team, not on the king's team, that he can truly demonstrate his profound integrity and value system. Zogt Alter Rebbe, the same exact is true concerning all of the doubts the Sitra Achira throws in into man's mind and heart. She attempts to create a crisis in faith, telling him that there is no God, there is no absolute reality, there is no cosmic oneness, and so forth. She knows very well that the whole existence and her whole existence comes exclusively from Hashem. She knows very well that what she is doing now, she is capable of doing only because it's the will of Hashem. But she was given the permission to portray herself in that light, to suggest to the human being a reality that never existed, a reality that doesn't exist. And the only reason she was given that permission is that man's endeavors, that man's work can be truly meaningful and powerful. So here is the challenge of the human being. If you embrace these doubts and you grant them validity, you say, you know, this is what I really am. Let me behave. This is who I really am. Let me behave that way. You just gave credence to something that has essentially no credence whatsoever. It is only you who can give it validity, because there is no reality here. The fact that it can be perceived as a reality is just in order to challenge you, that you should be the one who should call it on its emptiness, who should tell it what it really is. The challenge of a Jew is that he has to know that there is one reality, and there is one true reality, and there is no other real existence, only things that can suggest themselves to be existences. So true, it can exist, it can be perturbing, it can sometimes be frustrating. The Alter Rebbe says, don't go crazy, don't let it plunge you into despair. Remember that your true self, the only true self, is your soul. This is appearing in order that you should have an ability to bust it, to slap it in the face, to deflate it, and to identify it for what it really is. And when you identify it for what it really is, its real self is revealed. And what is its real self? Nothing. So the bottom line the Alter Rebbe is saying here, at the conclusion of chapter 29, that there are no atheists in foxholes, or anywhere else for that matter.
So the people don't believe Lamaisa, what's their situation? Clogged up. They're totally clogged up a whole lifetime, not even once has it come out.
Bouncing back. This is a point for us to eventually
bounce. From the Alter Rebbe's point of view, a lack of faith can be defined as a clog up.
You clog for a whole lifetime.
Everybody, in some level, is Mahusar in the Muna.
When we talk about we being clogged up, let's remember that in essence, our life's mission for the 80, 90, 100, 120, 180 years we live.
Drain
them. Drain.
Huh?
Drain them. Clear the clog.
Is to clear the rubble. And to allow our souls to emerge in its full splendor. It's a very challenging endeavor, because sometimes the rubble is coarse, and then when we remove that rubble, there is more fine and more subtle debris. But the purpose of a human being is to probe deeper and deeper, and not to allow himself to define himself by the external layers of the cosmos, by the external layers of his psyche, but rather by his true inner identity and the true inner identity of the world, which is soul.
But however high that ascent goes, then the other stuff also comes back. So whatever level, so it's
on a more subtle level.
And all the people that live their whole lives totally oblivious to this, they come back and do it all over again.
And all people that live their whole lives totally oblivious to this, I have not met a person who lives his whole life totally oblivious to this.
So even if you
One second. People might not identify their dilemmas in the words that Alter Rebbe is identifying it for various reasons, but I have never met a human being who's totally oblivious to this. And the reason for that is because what happens if you don't eat for a day? What happens to you? You get hungry. Next step. What happens as a result of your hunger?
Agitated.
You get agitated. Good. Short, next step.
Short fused.
You get short fused. Next step.
Can you get a little bit angry?
You can get a little bit angry. And step nu weiter.
Rage.
Rage. Okay.
And then weakness.
And then weakness.
And then tears.
And then depression. Okay. Very good. That's a natural phenomenon. Now what happens if the soul is not fed? The soul is hungry. It becomes cranky. It becomes agitated. It becomes cranky. It becomes frustrated. The next thing is it gets depressed. So it sends the person into therapy. That's why half of our civilization today is in therapy. Especially Jews. A soul that's not nourished is hungry, is cranky, is unhappy. Now, Everyone experiences the voice of the soul in one way or another. It may be, and the symptoms of it. The question is how we identify the symptoms. One person identifies the symptoms as a call for him to travel to the Far East and experience new lifestyles. Another person identifies the symptoms of the soul's weeping as a call for him to do another mishigas in his life. Every person responds different ways. But which person, have you met one person who's not seeking true inner wholesomeness, true inner honesty, true inner happiness? A sense of serenity, of uncloudedness, a sense of inner tranquility and harmony and so forth.
But even if they, so fine, so they're going through all that, but they don't credit any of it to their neshama. They don't credit any of the whole lives. They still don't recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But they go on self-improvement and everything else, but it's nothing to do with their neshama.
You're taking the right medicine.
Have a good night and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.